You guys found Psalms 87? It reads like this. On the holy mount stands the city he founded. The Lord loves the gates of Zion more than all the dwelling places of Jacob. Glorious things of you are spoken, O city of God. Among those who know me, I mention Rahab, that's Egypt, and Babylon. Behold, Philistia and Tyre with Cush. This one was born there, they say. And of Zion it shall be said, this one and that one were born in her. For the Most High himself will establish her. The Lord records as he registers the peoples, this one was born there. Singers and dancers alike say, all my springs are in you. Now, we'll come back to this. It's an interesting psalm. I've read through the Psalms many times. It was last Sunday. I was reading it early in the morning, and there was just something that caught my attention, which I want to just bring to yours this morning. And it's kind of how, at least it works for me, and maybe for you as well. Like, you know, when you study the scriptures, you can read through things over and over and over again. And then sometimes when we ask, like, the Holy Spirit can highlight things just to show us something new. And it's amazing how he can take old things and make them new. And so never think that just because you've read it before that God can't speak through it. And so I want to talk about Zion this morning and our understanding of it. I spoke on humility 2 weeks ago, but just so we understand, humility is not timidity. There's a confidence to humility, and it really needs to be balanced out with the boldness that God wants you to demonstrate, okay? Now, when you read through the scriptures and you read through the Psalms, and particularly the Psalms and the prophets, they reference Zion quite a lot. You guys have heard of Zion before, yeah? Okay. Zion is referred in the Old Testament, it's referred to about 150 times. Most of that you'll find in the Psalms and in the book of Isaiah. Isaiah speaks about this prophet. He spoke about Zion more than all the other prophets. Geographically, it suggested that Zion is identified as the city of David, which is not Bethlehem, it's Jerusalem. And this is where David, he brought the Ark of the Covenant. And it says in 2 Samuel 5, 6 through 7, it says, and the king and his men went to Jerusalem against the Jebusites, the inhabitants of the land, who said to David, you will not come in here, but the blind and lame will ward you off, thinking David cannot come in here. Nevertheless, David took the stronghold of Zion, that is the city of David. Now, the presence of the ark, David brought in the Ark of the Covenant. It's that scene we get where David is dancing around in his linen ephod before the Lord. His wife is looking down from the window, kind of disdaining him as he's dancing around. He's so excited that the Ark of the Covenant is there. And this would signify something very special for Jerusalem, because the Ark of the Covenant, it symbolized three things to the people back then. It was the throne of God, which is the authority of God. It was the power of God, and it was the presence of God. And that's actually being brought now. It's been missing for 70 years, and they're bringing it now back into Jerusalem so that his throne and his presence, his authority and his presence and his power are demonstrated there. And here's David. He's dancing before them, so excited that this is taking place. The presence of Yahweh, it gave new meaning to this Jerusalem once it was brought there. We come to signify the city of God, the city of the great king. And the psalmist writes, he says in Psalms 87, verse 3, which I read to you, he says, glorious things of you are spoken, O city of God. And this is what it says in Psalms 48. I'm going to read you the whole thing because you have to sit there and listen to me. So it goes like this. It says, great is the Lord and greatly to be praised, and the city of our God, his holy mountain, beautiful in elevation, is the joy of all the earth. Mount Zion in the far north, the city of the great king, within her citadels, God has made himself known as a fortress. For behold, the kings assembled, they came together, they came on together. As soon as they saw it, they were astounded, they were in panic, they took to flight. Trembling took hold of them there, as anguish as of a woman in labor. By the east wind you shattered the ships of Tarshish. As we have heard, so we have seen in the city of the Lord of hosts, in the city of our God, which God will establish forever. We have thought on your steadfast love, O God, in the midst of your temple. As your name, O God, so your praise reaches the ends of the earth. Your right hand is filled with righteousness. Let Mount Zion be glad. Let the daughters of Judah rejoice because of your judgments. Walk about Zion. Go around her. Number her towers. Consider well her ramparts. Go through her citadels that you will tell of the next generation that this is God, our God, forever and ever. He will guide us forever. This is a beautiful picture of this city. And in Psalms 46, just two chapters before, verses 4 and 5, it says, there is a river whose streams make glad the city of God, the holy habitation of the Most High. God is in the midst of her. She shall not be moved. God will help her when morning dawns. And so there is this theme through the scriptures of this amazing city, God's holy habitation. But the geographic location of Zion, it was really just a type and shadow of a deeper spiritual reality of God's holy city. Zion would eventually be employed not just for this one hilltop, but for the multi-hilled metropolis of Jerusalem. Later on, they would actually refer to the whole city of Jerusalem as Zion. And in this, as the prophets say, and as the psalmist writes, it will be secured forever, established forever. But the city actually gets destroyed twice. In 586 BC, under Nebuchadnezzar with the Babylonians, we actually see the entire temple system destroyed. Jerusalem is wiped out. You see it again in AD 70 under the Romans. They would come and they would actually surround Jerusalem, hem it in on every side, and they completely laid waste to Jerusalem in AD 70. 1.1 million Jews died that day. It's unfortunate that we actually don't really consider or take this into consideration, this historic event that took place. Jesus actually warned that this would take place, Luke 19, 43 through 44. He said to them, for the days will come upon you when your enemies will set up a barricade around you and surround you and hem you in on every side and tear you down to the ground, you and your children within you. And they will not leave one stone upon another in you because you did not know the time of your visitation. And this is exactly what took place in AD 70. Rome surrounded Jerusalem, completely laid waste to it. Jesus had warned everybody in Matthew 23 that the whole temple, not a stone would remain. That's exactly what took place. Mount Zion, the city of the great king, is no more. Yet the psalmist and the prophet say it will be established forever. It's not. In fact, as you continue to read on, almost everything that the psalmist and the prophets write about Mount Zion today, it's not true. There's a city that runs through it that's supposed to make people glad. It's dried up. It's not there. Zion is supposed to be the joy of the whole earth. It's not. Most people don't even know about Mount Zion. And, you know, when you consider David and you consider the prophets, you know, they spoke about this physical geographical location, but really they were speaking of something much more, something that was in the future that was meant to come and that you'd be waiting for it and preparing for it. And actually that it wasn't meant to just be some distant future event, but it was meant to be a spiritual reality that you can be a part of and belong to now. You know, I believe that David understood that Zion was a much larger future reality than just a hilltop in Jerusalem. And he actually anticipated the time when Yahweh would bring forth his son, the anointed one, to rule the nations. And so you actually see David in Psalms. Everyone's kind of attracted to Psalms 23. And so they kind of, because Psalms 23 is so well known, the Lord is my shepherd, they kind of missed out on Psalms 22. Psalms 22, David actually writes about what Jesus would go through on the cross. David saw the cross 1,000 years before it took place. Amazing. And you know, when you actually, and he goes into detail on everything that he would go through. It's an amazing psalm. And then in Psalms chapter 2, it seems like David sees even further beyond the cross to this reign, this rule and reign of Christ that we refer to as the millennial reign of Christ. It seems like David himself saw it. This is what Psalms 2 says. And I love the picture. Why do the nations rage and the peoples plot in vain? The kings of the earth set themselves and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against his anointed. That's the Christ. That's the anointed one, Jesus. Saying, let us burst their bonds apart and cast away their cords from us. Like they just want nothing to do with God. He who sits in the heavens laughs. And I love the picture. The Lord holds them in derision. Then he will speak to them in his wrath and terrify them in his fury, saying, as for me, I have set my king on Zion, my holy hill. I will tell the decree. The Lord said to me, you are my son. Today I have begotten you. He's not talking about David because they reference this verse in the book of Hebrews. He's speaking about Jesus who would one day come. You are my son. Today I have begotten you. Ask of me and I will make the nations your heritage, the ends of the earth your possession. You shall break them with a rod of iron. You don't even see that reference until Revelation chapter 2, the rod of iron. And dash them in pieces like a potter's vessel. Now therefore, O kings, be wise. Be warned, O rulers of the earth. Serve the Lord with fear. Rejoice with trembling. Kiss the Son, lest he be angry and perish in the way. For his wrath is quickly kindled. Blessed are those who take refuge in him. You know, I look at this and it just seems like to me, this looks like something that has not taken place yet. Where Jesus is sitting on, when he comes, he didn't come the way people anticipated him to come when Jesus died on the cross. They were looking for a ruler. They didn't get that. Jesus is coming again to rule the nations with a rod of iron, though. David's seeing this. This is what's going to take place. He's seeing this already. And a lot of people, what they do is they pacify the rule and reign of Jesus because they take the rod or the rod of iron, and it was one of the two tools that a shepherd had. He had the rod and he had the staff. And we use that in Psalms 23, which says, his rod and his staff, they comfort me. The staff was to steer the sheep. The rod was to beat off the wolves, basically, or to protect the sheep. But it was something here you actually read in Psalms 2, which says, you can't ignore the language. He shall break them, or he shall rule them with a rod of iron, the nations, and dash them in pieces like a potter's vessel. You can't pacify that language. Here's something that Jesus is going to do, and we see David, actually, he anticipates the cross. He anticipates this reign of Christ that will one day come. You know, we get so distracted by our own lives and what's currently going wrong in our own lives or going well in our own lives, and sometimes we fail to see or anticipate what's meant to take place. And we're all meant to be a part of it. You know, I see Isaiah as well. It's not just the psalmist. It's not just the sons of Korah or David. You actually see Isaiah as well. You would actually see what comes place and what were to take place after the cross. This is how far these people are seeing ahead. Isaiah 35:10, and the ransom of the Lord shall return and come to Zion with singing. Everlasting joy will be upon their heads. They shall obtain gladness and joy, and sorrow and sighing shall flee away. And you know, I understand that after Isaiah and you read about Jeremiah, and then the book of Lamentations comes, and it's like, oh man, it gets really serious, and everyone's like mourning and crying. Why Lamentations? And it's because Nebuchadnezzar had come and he had destroyed Jerusalem. They left the city desolate. And so no wonder the book of Lamentations makes a lot more sense when you understand what took place in Jerusalem. And here we have, it would be 70 years later after 586 BC, where Jerusalem was completely destroyed. 7 years later, the exiles would return. But they're not filled with everlasting joy. The joy was very fleeting. In fact, Nehemiah has to tell them, hey, snap out of it. Stop mourning. The joy of the Lord is your strength. Quit it. Shut up. Be joyful. But they're warring the whole time with everybody around them as they're trying to rebuild the temple and as they're trying to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. There isn't everlasting joy. It actually sounds more like Revelation 21, verse 4, where God introduces the new Jerusalem, and it says he will wipe away every tear from their eyes, and death shall be no more. Neither shall there be mourning, nor crying, nor pain anymore, for the former things have passed away. It seems like Isaiah is seeing something that even the exiles didn't see. He's seeing further and further ahead into what's meant to take place. Psalms 46 verse 4 states that there is a river running through the city of God that makes the city glad. That river is not there. Not now. Revelation 22, verse 1, it says, the angel showed me the river of the water of life, bright as crystal, flowing from the throne of God and the Lamb through the middle of the street of the city. And there's this beautiful picture of this, of really what the psalmist had written in Psalms 46, that this is actually what would take place later on in this Zion, this new Jerusalem. The psalmist and the prophets knew that the past physical, geographical Zion, it was a type and shadow of a future reality that we're all meant to be a part of. And that you'd anticipate it. This was meant to happen. There is a city. There is a nation. There is a kingdom that you belong to. You don't belong to this world. You belong to this nation, this kingdom, this king. The psalmist and the prophets, they were setting the stage for all of us. You don't belong to the previous Jerusalem. You belong to the new Jerusalem. This is where God declares the dwelling place of God is with men. It was his original tent from the garden. You think he's going to give that up? Not a chance. He's not going to give the enemy an inch. His plan, his will, it will be accomplished. The dwelling place of God is with us. The apostle Peter, he refers to this place of Zion that you were created to belong to. 1 Peter 2, 6 through 9. For it stands in Scripture, behold, I'm laying in Zion a stone. Speaking of Jesus, a cornerstone, chosen and precious, and whoever believes in him will not be put to shame. Everyone say believes. Believe. So the honor is for you who believe. But for those who do not believe, the stone that the builders rejected has become the cornerstone, a stone of stumbling and a rock of offense. This is Jesus. They stumble because they disobey the word as they were destined to do. But you, you're a chosen race. You're a royal priesthood. You are a holy nation, a people for his own possession, that you may proclaim the excellencies of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. God lays in Zion this stone. It's Jesus. And something interesting happens to those who believe. You're not put to shame, but those who believe, they become part of a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, because believing, it should lead us to belonging. You don't belong to a previous Jerusalem. You belong to a new Jerusalem. You don't belong to this world and this kingdom that's here. You belong to the kingdom of heaven. Believing should always lead us towards belonging. Zion isn't a place to simply believe for one day. It is actually a reality to belong to today. You with me? This is what you are meant to belong to. Don't just believe for it, belong to it. You know, you ever hear someone with an accent and wonder where they belong, where they're from, right? You know, I've had throughout the years, just living with the Maxwells, I've had people come to me all the time saying, "Where's Pastor Phil from?" Right? And you know what? A lot of people come to me and say, "Well, where are you from?" You know? And because I've just picked up a few little words, and you won't hear it now because I'm aware of it. But like I've lived with them since I was like, I've been around South Africans since I was 13 years old, and so I've got a musical ear. I just pick up things, and so people are confused. Like, "Where are you from?" I'm like, "I'm from West Orange." Like, "I'm from West Orange, New Jersey." Okay? This is where I'm from, all right? People ask me that. And it's funny because my wife has like we kind of reached equilibrium. Like she's picked up the American accent, I've picked up a part of a South African accent. So like we just don't hear it anymore. But you know, in New Jersey we have this saying, or if you're from New York, we have this saying, like, "Hey, how you doing?" Right? "Hey, how you doing?" It's not a greeting. It's a greeting, but it's like, I don't really care to know how you're doing. It's me just acknowledging the fact that you're in my presence as I'm walking by. "Hey, how you doing? Hey, how you doing?" Right? And we walk by our way. If you go outside of New Jersey and you use that, "Hey, how you doing?" people are actually going to tell you how they're doing. I was in California a few weeks ago, in Southern California, and I'm walking by this guy. It was the sun was setting. I just wanted to go see the sunset. I'm walking quickly, and this guy is sitting on this bench. I go, "Hey, how you doing?" And he starts to tell me. And I'm like, now I have to stand here and listen to you? I felt like a horrible Christian. I was like, I don't really care. In my mind, I'm thinking that. And then he's like, and how are you? And I'm like, great, I'm great. I just want to walk. I just want to keep moving, all right? You don't tell people. Here, it's just like, I'm acknowledging your presence as I'm walking by. I don't really care to know how you're doing. So, hey, how you doing? How you doing? And you keep on walking by. That's how it is. That's how, you know, what I was, Claire and I, we were on a road trip one time. Well, you know, here in New Jersey, the way people drive drives me crazy. But I do the same thing. We always tailgate people, right? We're always in a rush. It's terrible. I just want to take like golf balls and throw them out my window. That'll teach you. But then I do the same thing. I'm such a hypocrite, you know. So like I'm driving, but you know, when you go out west, I mean, you can tell where people are from the Northeast. Yeah, you're gonna get tailgated. And the out west, Claire and I were taking a road trip together, and I'm coming up on this guy really, really quickly, and he's taking his sweet time, right? Because he's from the Midwest, and I've got places to be, all right? I'm from the Northeast. And as I'm coming up on him, he sees me. He pulls over to the side and waves me by. And I pass, and then he gets back on the road. I was like, I love him. You know, it's just like, you know, it's just like... It's like, who does that? Why can't we do that here? Why can't that be part of our culture here? But it's not. You know, like, when I was in Southern California, you know, they bought me Pizza Hut. Yeah. You know, and I was like, you know, we don't really eat Pizza Hut, but I was really grateful that they bought Pizza Hut. I mean, here, I'm not even Italian, guys. I'm not even Italian at all. But like, if there isn't like a good Italian name, we go to Vinny's. Like, we know it's like good, it's kosher, because it's from Vinny's, okay? All right? You're welcome, Vinny's, if you're watching. But like, you know, out in Flemington, our new place, when we move out there, it's going to be Joe's. I've already had Joe's. I like Joe. We're going to go to Joe's, okay? But like, you know, I found out over there in Southern California, you know, it's not the pizza that they're crazy about. It's the burrito. They're serious about their burritos. You never disrespect the burrito. And I was like, Sean, you want a good burrito? I was like Chipotle? They laughed at me. I was like, come on. I was like, oh, so like the equivalent of our Pizza Hut here or out there is Chipotle. You don't do Chipotle. They don't like Chipotle. You don't talk about Chipotle. You know, you can tell a lot where someone is from based on their accent and their interests and the way they drive, the food they eat. And Psalms 87, verse 4, it says, among those who know me. And he mentions these places. I mentioned Rahab, which is Egypt, and Babylon, behold, Philistia and Tyre with Cush. This one was born there. Speaking of Zion. You know, I guess this particular psalmist, maybe he was just really well known, and there's all these different nations that seem to know him. But out of all the dwelling places of Israel, they could tell, yeah, this one's from Zion. This one's from there, they say. They could tell there was something he carried. Some type of culture. It was what he belongs to. It wasn't just mere belief. This is who I am. This is what I'm about. This is what I belong to. That's where I'm from. Psalms 87, verse 5. And of Zion it shall be said, this one and that one were born in her. For the Most High will establish himself with it. The Most High himself will establish her. Which is to say, well, you know, word is getting out about this Zion. Of Zion it shall be said. Like, the word is getting out about this place. This person and that person, they're all born there. They're all born again in her. It's like all of a sudden it begins to change the way that you think and believe and imagine and conduct your life. That you're not being so conformed to the patterns of this world, but you're being transformed by the renewing of your mind. That this isn't just something, Christianity isn't just something to believe in, it's something to belong to. It changes your very culture, if you will. I don't know if I can get rid of how you're doing, but like, it changes things. There's a process, absolutely. But I don't want to stay this. I want to be changed into the image that he has for me. And I love the picture of the Father. Psalms 87, verse 6. And the Lord records as he registers the people. This one was born there. It's this beautiful picture of the Father. And it's like this, as people give their hearts to Jesus, they surrender their lives. You begin to see the change taking place. Oh yeah, this one's born here. You get it from Hebrews 12, 22 through 23. But you've come to Mount Zion, the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, and to innumerable angels and festal gathering, and to the assembly of the firstborn who are enrolled. The word is, who are registered in heaven and to God. You're registered. Everyone could tell where this guy came from. Out of all the dwelling places of Israel, they knew this one. Oh, he's from Zion. It's how he drives. I don't know. There must have been a nature he carried. Maybe the way he spoke and conducted his life, it just set him apart. You know, I don't want to just believe in Jesus. I want to belong to Jesus. I don't want people to say, whether for good or for bad, because, these people, they're from Zion. You know, I don't want to fit so comfortably into my culture, this culture, that people can't see, hey, we're not from here. You with me? Zion isn't a place to believe for one day. It's a reality to belong to now. You know, and if believing in Jesus isn't leading you to belonging to Jesus, then you really should question whether or not you truly believe. And James 2:19 says, you believe that God is one, you do well. Even the demons believe and shudder. The demons believe, they just don't belong. They have a different nature. You can tell where they belong. And it isn't Zion. You're in this world. You're not of this world. That of, it really denotes where a person is from, what they belong to. You're in this world, you just don't belong to this world. You belong to him. You know, right now, this world needs those who are from Zion. In Zion, the people from Zion, they have this nature about them. Humble, yes. Timid, no. Zion was located in Judah. It says in Psalm 78, 67 through 68, he rejected the tent of Joseph. He did not choose the tribe of Ephraim, but he chose the tribe of Judah, Mount Zion, which he loves. You know, Jesus, he's the lion of the tribe of Judah, and there is a nature we are meant to carry. There's a nature that you're meant to carry if you're from Zion. Humble, yes. Timid, no. You know, I know the Lord is my shepherd, and we're his sheep, a part of his flock. But he shepherds lions. If I'm anybody's sheep, I'm his, but I'm not the world's sheep. You with me? You know, so many Christians think that the nature of Christianity is like a lamb, and I get it because Jesus is a shepherd. But Jesus isn't the lamb. He's got this title, Lamb Who Was Slain. But sometimes we look at Jesus like this lamb because we think of him at Christmas time as baby Jesus, meek and mild. He's not that. He is Jehovah Sabaoth. He's the captain of the angel armies. He is the lion of the tribe of Judah. You know, here's the thing, is just that Jesus isn't the lamb who sometimes acts like a lion. Jesus is the lion who once acted like a lamb and went to the cross, becoming the lamb who was slain. That's his nature. That's who he is. That's what he's called you to be. Lambs are not change agents. They do not carry authority well. If a lion were to walk into this room, if a lamb were to walk into this room, I'd be like, oh. If a lion were to walk in this room, I'd be like, oh. He would have my immediate attention and respect, right? Lambs don't carry authority well, lions do. Jesus gave us authority at the cross, but you won't carry it or exercise it if you're going to act like a lamb. And I think Christians today need to stop pacifying our rule here in this world. You're called to be humble, you're not called to be timid. You have not been given a spirit of fear, timidity, panic. You've been given a spirit of power, love, and self-control. You with me? We need lions to carry the authority of Christ into our schools. All the crap that they're teaching them right now. We need lions to carry the authority of Christ into our schools. We need lions to get involved in local, state, and federal government. We need lions to get into entertainment in the private sector. Because right now, it's full of jackals. And you're not going to do well amongst jackals if you're going to act like a lamb. The people of Zion and Judah need to step into positions of authority in this world. Because here's the thing. We come to church and we have this claim as Christians. Jesus died on the cross. He gave us his identity and he gave us his authority. But we only operate in his identity and his authority within the four walls of a building we call a church. Where the rubber meets the road is where it really actually matters is out there. Okay? And so we claim, oh, I have the authority of Christ. I have resurrection power. But then we refuse to wield that authority and that power in positions of authority and power in the world. You with me? Because far too long we look at our position as lambs rather than lions. You're called to be the salt and the light of the earth. You know, I used to think that salt was about preserving tradition and light was about exposing sin. And those were in my Pharisee days, okay? You know, sometimes we're like recovering Pharisees. I get it. Okay? I've come to believe that salt is about flavor and light is about color, and we're meant to be the flavor and the color of heaven to the world. All right? But ultimately, salt and light is about truth. And for those in darkness, light can be blinding. It's like, oh my gosh, they're totally from Zion. Ugh. You know, and for, you know, the world is currently self-inflicting itself. Throwing salt in the wound, it's going to burn, right? Sometimes the truth, it burns, and sometimes it blinds. But Jesus says you never take the light and put it under a bushel. You put it on a stand. It's not like God's it says that he dwells in unapproachable lights. It's not like he's like, well, let me dim it a little bit for you so you can adjust. He never does that because he's not the one who needs to change. We do, right? And it's not like we should at the same time as well maybe we should just dim our lights so they can get used to it first. We've tried that. It hasn't helped the world at all. The church has totally tried that. It doesn't work. They just keep asking us to dim it and dim it and dim it, and we need to crank it up. If you're from Zion, I pray people get sunburn around you. Okay? You know, they should be wearing sunglasses around you. Especially right now with where the world's at. The world doesn't need us to dim truth. It needs us to bring truth. And you're not going to bring it if you're just going to come as a lamb. Man, we need to approach this as a lion. This is the authority that we've been given as children of God. And may people say of you, yep, we can tell. They're from Zion. Sunglasses on. All right? Amen. Amen. Let's stand. Let's have the worship team come on up.